And welcome to the show, everyone. I'm your host, Dr. TJ Williams. With me, as always, is Aaron.
Hi.
She said hi. I didn't even have to ask for a hi. Hey, look at there. How are you doing this wonderful
amazing
day? Awesome. All right. So if you're new to the show, we provide common sense, science-based strategies for a healthy life. And last week, I highly encourage you to go back and listen to last week's show if you missed it. Because last week's show was part one of this show. We're having a continuation of last week. We're talking about conventional medicine and chronic disease and how conventional medicine really isn't the best at helping people that have chronic disease.
Right, while it will never fix chronic disease.
Right, and Aaron told her story as well. So just a little bit about what we talked about. We talked about how, you know, half of Americans now suffer from a chronic disease. 25% of us have multiple chronic diseases. Chronic disease is responsible for 7 of 10 deaths. Chronic disease are things that, you know, for those of you who are not really certain, those are things that you're dealing with for a long period of time, things like heart disease, diabetes,
depression, anxiety,
yes,
IBS, IBD.
All of this stuff is chronic disease. If it's
asthma,
if you're taking a medication, yeah, the list just keeps going.
I'll just go in the background.
She's so excited. She's gonna read quietly in the background.
Yes.
If you're to just general rule of thumb, if you're taking a medication for something and you've been taking that medication for a long period of time, or you know that that's what's going to happen for you,
you'll have to be taking a medication.
Yeah,
indefinitely.
You are suffering from a chronic disease. That's just how it is. So
we're going to cover more of about chronic disease today and why conventional medicine will never fix it, that they're right. The current way that they're addressing chronic disease will never fix chronic disease.
Right.
So this is, again, another part two of a show. And I know we've gotten a lot of messages from people saying, we love these two-part shows. We love the information. And maybe I shouldn't admit this. That is not strategy on our part. Yeah. It's just poor planning. And we're just talking way too much about some of these topics. But
Aaron tells stories and exactly. Gets us off track. Yeah.
But I really appreciate the fact that you guys like them. So here we go.
Right. Well, we had lots of comments on your story. So that's a good thing. Okay. So.
Well, I think, unfortunately, it's all too common.
Oh, it's extremely common.
Yeah.
Every single day we see it in the clinic. It's so common.
Right. And
it's
It's my story with a chronic health issue. There's much more.
Three.
But I don't see this as this is not my life story. There is way more, which is good because I think a lot of people that, are treated through conventional medicine, and never actually get better, that becomes their life.
Right.
And I want to make just a point there that, that is one small aspect of what my life is. And it was a small period of time when I was sick. And I still say when I was sick, even though I still actually have these issues, I do not consider myself sick because I don't look sick. I don't act sick. I don't feel sick.
Right.
And that's a huge difference. Yeah.
That's exactly right. So we talked last week about, we've reached a point in this country where so many people have chronic disease that it's just become common. But that's definitely just because something is common does not mean that it's normal. It's not normal to have a chronic disease.
Right. I mean, we've talked about this before with, when we did the depression episode, how many people are on antidepressants? It's shocking, the number. It isn't uncommon. It's not normal to have to take an antidepressant. It's certainly, we don't want to ever get back to point where people were criticized for getting treatment for depression, but right. That can't be the answer.
Right.
Because people don't come off of antidepressants. They're on them for the rest of their lives.
And that cannot be the answer.
I know we talked last week about, there are certain chronic diseases that we find the patients, it's harder to change. Those who are suffering from depression are actually, and I think that might be surprising, some of the best about changing.
Right.
And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that the antidepressant isn't working.
Well, they don't like how they feel on it.
Exactly.
That's a big thing is people, we've been instructed in this country that how you feel is a driver of your health. And luckily for us, antidepressants make people feel differently, and they don't like how they feel on that. But what's sad is heart disease, people don't know that they have it. And so then when they find out, oh my gosh, I have heart disease, they either are blown away that we found out that they have raging cardiovascular disease, or we didn't get to them and they dropped down of a heart attack and maybe they survived it, maybe they didn't. But that's when they finally realize that they have cardiovascular disease, is after it's, you know, possibly too late.
Right.
Because half the people that have their first heart attack aren't going to survive it. It's pitiful.
Yeah, that's scary.
That's the symptom of half of the people that are going to have their very first heart attack this year is death. That's not a fun symptom to have. But that's unfortunately how it works. And so, you know, we talked a lot last week about personal responsibility. You can take control of your health. There are people out there like us who will give you hope and won't sugarcoat it. I will tell you to your face, look, this is what you have going on. This is serious. This is how you need to address it. Then you get to choose. You get to choose if you want to address that issue. Most people do. Like I said last week, occasionally people aren't ready to make that step. They're like, oh my gosh, I can't change my life like that. I can't stop eating this or stop doing that or do this or do that or do something else. Okay, fine. But eventually they come to the point where they're like, okay, it's gone too far now. Now I can't do this thing that I like to do. And so I've got to fix that. And that's when they decide, okay, now I'm ready to fix it. And usually by that time, it's made it a much more difficult fix. I mean, if we had a big problem to begin with and we didn't do anything about it, we're going to have a bigger problem down the road. We've got other things that we've got to deal with at that point.
Right. Well, and I mean, you know, we talked last week about the fact that, you know, I do have three autoimmune conditions. If I had been treated appropriately at the beginning, I seriously doubt I would have had three.
Yeah, you might have just had one.
Yeah. I mean,
if someone had been watching, you might not have ever had one.
Exactly. I may have avoided it altogether. And so let that be a lesson. I mean, really let that sink in, all of you out there. And if you know others, I mean, who are suffering from, you know, different problems, that, I mean, getting this treated early makes a huge difference, because like I said, while I think, you know, my life is great now, I feel good, there are changes because I have three autoimmune conditions. And to know that that could have been avoided is really frustrating.
Right. Well, and a lot of that, let's use a different example. So I like lots of car and house analogies. I mean, you don't wait until your engine explodes to change your oil in your car.
Right.
That's not what we do. There's a maintenance schedule for that. We need to be on maintenance schedules for our health. We need to be checking stuff. I mean, you don't wait until your teeth are falling out of your head to go to the dentist. You go on a regular basis and you make sure that you're brushing your teeth between and flossing your teeth between dental visits. That's just something that we do. That's part of life. I mean, if you've got little kids, you're teaching your children good dental habits from an early age, because we know how devastating it can be to have tooth and gum problems. That's just tooth and gum issues. Now let's take it a step further and say, okay, we know the dangers and damages of having cardiovascular disease, or, you know, gaining a lot of weight, or, you know, becoming a type 2 diabetic, or whatever other chronic disease that are preventable. We know the cost and damage that can be. Why don't we start taking our health into our own hands and start doing this stuff? I mean, we don't have a model out there for that in modern medicine. Unfortunately, it's not there, and it probably never will be. Those are things that are going to be, you're going to come to practitioners like us who say, okay, this is how you can go about, you know, monitoring, addressing. We can see things earlier. We're paying attention to things earlier. And you start to become in tune with your own body and noticing when things are changing or going awry. It's very easy to fix if you catch it early. Once we let it go into, you know, full-blown diabetes that has blindness and kidney failure and heart disease coming along with it, well, you know what? There's a lot less that we can do at that point.
Right. No, exactly. And I think, you know, you had mentioned this about, you know, going to the dentist and stuff. I think the same thing is true. I mean, a lot of people look at health like, okay, well, what is insurance going to cover? But that doesn't make any sense if you only go with what insurance covers. I mean, we've talked about this before with car insurance. I mean, so you have car insurance in case something happens with your car.
Well, by that analogy, when your car ran out of gas, you would go plow it into something so your car insurance would help to pay for everything.
Right. I mean, well, it
makes
would
no sense.
It would be never filling. Yeah. Never filling up your gas tank.
Never changing your fluids.
Right. Never. Yeah. Never checking the oil or doing anything.
Never rotating the tires, changing the nothing.
Right. Changing the brakes because you only need what car insurance covers. And if insurance doesn't cover it, it must not be necessary.
Right.
Well, that's how we look at health. And that makes absolutely no sense. And that's why we're so sick.
Right. Health insurance is there to help you in times of catastrophe.
Yeah, not lose your life.
Right. And it's very good for that. But it's not what we should be relying on to keep us healthy.
Right. We need to raise our standards.
Right.
Because, I mean, we need to be expecting more from our lives and what we can expect from our health.
And you can do this. There are ways of doing it. There are ways of regaining control. I mean, I talked to so many patients. And all of them, on our very first visit, when you're brand new to the clinic, we talk about the fact that our job is to put your health care back into your hands and allow you to make the decisions that you need to make. Now, my job is to educate you and give you as much information as possible and tell you, look, if you don't do it, this is what you're looking at. If you do do it, this is what you're trying to avoid. That's the bottom line. We're trying to help you learn more to make a better decision to be able to do more.
Right. But I think what, you know, I mean, we make the process simpler by showing you what is going to be the, you know, give you the biggest benefits, because it's, even if you're someone who is like, I'm ready to take control of my health. Sometimes, you know, we've talked about this with food sensitivities. Sometimes, you know, you can change your diet and start eating all of these things you think are healthy, and you're actually really sensitive to them. So what we do is try to short circuit that and say, what is the quickest way that you can get from unhealthy to healthy?
Right. All right. Liz is yelling at us. We've got to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk some more about chronic disease, and we're going to talk about some we're actually going to get into some consequences of chronic disease this time, I promise. You're listening to Wellness 101. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. If you're just tuning in, we are talking about chronic disease, and I think it's been a couple of weeks now that we've been promising to get to the consequences of chronic disease, and I think we're finally there. We've managed to get Erin on track.
Right. No, I'm just going to keep my mouth shut, so take it away.
All right. Well, that hasn't worked the last couple of weeks, so yeah. We'll see how well that goes.
I'm not promising anything, but.
No, absolutely not. So we did mention, I think it was last week, we talked about how chronic disease is not a small problem. It's affecting Western populations. It's just devastating. It's got a devastating financial aspect to it. Our lives are shorter. We talked last week about where our kids are the first generation that will live shorter than their parents in a number of years. I mean, it's just horrible what's going on. So think about it like this. I like statistics and numbers. That's kind of the guy I kind of am. Two-thirds of Americans are overweight. 66% of us are overweight. So that's just astounding to me.
One in three.
And one in three is obese. That's a ton.
Yeah.
So I'm almost speechless when you think about there are 320-ish million people in this country, and over 200 million of us are overweight, and 100 million of us are obese.
I mean, yeah, that's crazy. If you think you put three people together, you know, I mean, two of them will be overweight, and one of them will be obese.
True.
It's crazy.
It's insane. It's insane. And I think it was Reuters that did an article on obesity in the United States. They reported that half of Americans will be obese by 2030. So that's quick, Matt. That's 13 years from now. In 13 years, half of Americans will be obese. Whoa.
That's scary because of all the health consequences that go along with it.
Yeah. I mean, the massive amount of health problems that come along with being obese. It's just...
Right. Let's talk about autism spectrum disorder.
Okay. She's keeping us on track, ladies.
I'm trying.
She's bound determined to get through our notes. I don't know. Yeah, autism. I mean, it's... The rates of autism or the prevalence of autism spectrum has doubled from 2000 to 2010. So in 10 years, our prevalence of that doubled. And this isn't just because we are better at detecting it. This is that you can't double something just because all of a sudden we can detect it better. There's no possible way that's the only reason. I mean, autoimmune diseases have doubled and even tripled over the past 50 years. And I say doubled or tripled because it depends on whose statistics you're looking at and what's going on. So that's insane.
Well, and I think so much of autoimmune disease, it goes undetected. I mean, we've talked tons. About before that doctors don't feel equipped to address it or diagnose it. So, I mean, so many people who are suffering from autoimmune diseases are never diagnosed, and that's why the statistics are difficult to actually put out there.
Well, it's because we only can identify about 20 different autoimmune conditions, but we know that there are over 100.
Right. That's a big difference.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty sad. So, you know, and I harp on this a lot. Autoimmune disease, it doesn't matter which one you have. The basic physiology behind it is exactly the same. It's your body attacking you. And it's attacking some sort of tissue, and it might be attacking your thyroid today and you've got Hashimoto's, and tomorrow it might attack your joints and you've got rheumatoid arthritis. Doesn't matter. It's the same basic physiologic principles that are going on.
Unfortunately, modern medicine looks at it like, oh, okay, let's look at the joints.
Right.
I mean, never addressing the fact that it's not the joints that are the problem. It's the fact that your body is attacking itself.
Right. Or they try to just completely suppress the immune system and say, you know, we're going to do our best to shut your immune system off. And that's not really the right way to do it either.
Because I think we all know there's a purpose for the immune system.
Right. The immune system is doing exactly what it's supposed to do.
Right.
The problem is you've got a faulty immune system. So let's fix the immune system. Let's work on getting your body balanced where your immune system isn't all crazy.
Right. You don't just cut it off.
Right.
I mean, that doesn't make sense. I mean, you know, like, it's like breaking your arm and cutting off your arm because you're like, well, it's not working properly.
Yeah, it's not
like
that doesn't make sense. Cut your arm off. It makes no sense whatsoever.
Yeah. It's not a necessary part of your body anyway. So
yeah,
just get rid of it.
You don't need it. You have another one.
Right.
God gave you two. It's crazy. And another thing with chronic disease, over half of adults are taking prescription medications, and 40% of the elderly, and I think elderly is defined as over 65, take more than 5 medications. And those are conservative numbers.
Right.
Conservative numbers.
Right. I mean, it's certainly not what we see in the clinic.
No, heavens no. It's definitely not what we see in the clinic. We are actually amazed when someone comes in taking less than 5 meds. Amazed. And then we're like, okay, we really talk to them like, okay, what is this one for? And what is this one for? And why are you on this? Because people are on medications for non-intended uses.
Right.
So there are a lot of off-label uses of medications. And that's fine. If a doctor understands the physiology behind what they're doing and they're trying to go after something and they're going after a specific effect, I completely understand that. But a lot of times the patients don't understand that, and they're not really sure why they're taking the meds, because they'll literally say, I'm taking this. Why are you taking it? I'm not really sure. My doctor told me that that's what I needed to take. Okay. So then it's our job to, you know, I have to go back and educate the patient on, okay, this is what this medication is typically for. These are some off-label uses. This is what you're complaining of. This is likely what they're doing. And sometimes we'll get you know what? Maybe that's right. And other times we're like, I had no idea.
Yeah.
It's
well, and what
baffling.
I think is crazy, I mean, anytime, you know, I go to like the dentist or something, I mean, I don't go and see, you know, normal doctors, but anytime I have to fill something out, you know, they're amazed. They're like, you don't take any prescription medication?
Yeah.
I'm just like, no, why is that shocking?
What's...
Like, why? That should not be abnormal, but it is. I mean, I'm not that old. I mean, the fact that as we talked about, you know, with people as they get older being put on more medications, we've had a number of times, and TJ, maybe you can speak to this, where people have relatives that are in a nursing home or something where they're like, can you look at the medications? Because, you know, my mother or my father, you know, whoever is going downhill, or, you know, or my husband, and there are known drug interactions.
Yeah.
And that's terrifying. And it's happened at a rate that I would have had no idea.
Right.
Because you think, well, they're in a nursing home, like someone's watching this. So I just want to put that out there. I have nothing, you know, I'm not criticizing nursing homes, but it happens a lot because they're on so many medications that no one bothered to check to make sure that they weren't interacting.
Because it's hard for the doctors to be able to communicate. That's one of the problems with modern medicine is, you know, it's not like the doctors are not trying. It's that they didn't know that they were also on these other things because they just didn't get the information.
Right.
So,
a lot of times, when they're in a nursing home or even in assisted living, because a lot of times this happens when they're in assisted living facility, they're still doing okay. They're still coherent. They're going and talking to their doctor, but that doesn't mean they remember exactly what they're taking. Because, I mean, you know, you add a number of medications, and I'm not sure I would remember either. And especially when the drugs are interacting with each other, might make their memory worse. So
I don't know of a single study out there that's looking at more than two or three medications and the interactions that are going on. When we're taking 5, 10 medications, 12, 15, there's no possible way to have any clue as to what possible interaction may be going on.
Right. Because there's
think about that.
Think how would that study look? I mean, first of all, I mean, of course, these aren't, you know, human studies anyway, but even, you know, on studies with mice, like they're not, what are the chances that they've tested someone taking the precise medications that you're taking if you're taking five or more?
Right. There's just no way.
I mean, it wouldn't make any sense.
Right. And there's no way to statistically, from a statistical standpoint, there's no way to account for all of the built-in error that would be in that study. There's no possible way to guess.
Right. And that's why we see so many medications, once they're on the market, then all of a sudden, you know, a few years later, you find out, oh, wait, it's on, you know, it's been taken off the market. You start seeing all of these attorney ads saying, hey, if you've had this complication from taking this medication, that's because when it was, you know, they said that it was safe.
They didn't realize that it was going to create a problem because somebody was taking, you know, 17 other medications when they took it.
But I mean, you know, common sense would tell you if you're giving a medication to someone who is sick with especially a chronic disease, chronic disease tends to breed chronic disease.
Right.
So chances are they're on more than one medication.
Right. That's exactly right. So, yeah. So, I mean, you know, it's frustrating and crazy. So, all right, we got to take another break. When we come back, I guess we're going to continue on with consequences of chronic disease. We have a few more notes here. And maybe we can get into real reasons why conventional medicine has failed.
Yeah, the whole
to
point of the show. We're halfway through the second episode.
You're listening to Wellness 101. And welcome back. Here we are, 2 weeks into the show. We're finally getting to the point of these last 2 weeks' show. Very exciting.
We're not quite there yet, though.
We're almost there. We might get there by the end. I'm not really sure. Okay, so we've been talking about consequences of having a chronic disease and how profound they are. But one of the things, there's an article out there, the Physicians Foundation did a survey, and then there's also a book out there, Fixing Primary Care Crisis. It's a pretty good book. But some interesting statistics that they found in this, 90% of doctors feel medicine is on the wrong track. Huh.
Yes. 90%.
And 83% of doctors have actually thought about quitting medicine. And that makes sense if you understand what it took to deal with managed healthcare on the back end. I completely understand
that.
Well,
and also, I just think, you know, we know from our end that, I mean, we get resumes, you know, or CVs from doctors all the time asking if we're hiring.
Yeah. Are you hiring? Can we help? Can I be of assistance?
You know, unfortunately, I mean, while, you know, we do have medical doctors in our clinic, a lot of them are used to making, I mean, we keep our prices as low as possible.
Right.
And we do that, you know, I mean, we're never going to be millionaires out of this, but we're going to help a lot of people.
Yep.
And that's what we care about. And unfortunately, a lot of the doctors that we've talked to are so used to a certain lifestyle that we're just like, we're never going to be able to support that here.
Right.
We won't, you know, and it won't feel like we're in integrity with ourselves to do that.
Right. That's just not how it works. Half of doctors describe themselves as either often or always feeling burned out. I mean, if you're going to your doctor and they feel burned out, I'm afraid they're not going to be doing the absolute best job that they can do. I mean, you can ask any one of the patients at our clinic. I mean, I am the happiest, most upbeat, farthest from burned out person on the planet. I love going to work every single day.
Right.
Well, I love my patients. I love helping. I love taking care of them. I mean, they become family.
Well, because you know that you're actually helping, and that, I mean, that makes a huge difference. But I also, you know, knowing you, I mean, I know about these, you know, the times when you end up getting home really late from the office, and then we're, you know, you're checking emails or responding to messages on Facebook, because all of these people, if people are all over the world who are contacting us saying, you know, listen to your podcast and I want, you know, and I've looked at your website and I think you can help. And so
right.
It doesn't end, you know, when the clinic closes.
No.
This keeps going. So you have to have that passion behind you.
And so when I look a little tired in the clinic, it's because I was up until 2 a.m. dealing with people around the world.
Yeah.
It's just kind of what's happening now. It's
yeah.
a great thing, but that's just, that's right. just part of it. But
and I mean, you know,
it's fuel to the fire. I don't feel burned out.
Exactly.
Well,
I mean,
love
we've
it.
Talked about this before, you know, I mean, I help out some at the clinic with things, some of the marketing and stuff, but I work as a full-time attorney, and there are times when I go to bed and he's still up, and then he gets up before me. I mean, so, and I know I work crazy hours compared to most people. So, I mean, you have to have the passion behind you to be able to sustain that. And
right.
it's that rewarding to see what a difference we're making in so many people's lives.
Right. It's not that difficult. It's really not. Sorry. If you've been having trouble out there, call us, because it's not right. as hard as you think that it might be.
But imagine all of these physicians who, you know, have gone through all of this schooling, you know, with the desire to help people, and then they're working these long hours and the people aren't getting better. They're getting sicker.
Right.
It makes sense that physicians would feel, a lot of them would feel burned out.
Yeah.
And then a lot of them start learning about what would actually help, and then find out, oh, wait, no, you can't actually do that because, you know, insurance won't cover it. Or maybe, you know, the hospital will revoke your privileges. I mean, it's difficult. And I understand where the burnout would come from.
Right. Right. Exactly. So here's some other interesting information. So we've talked about United States spending on healthcare. We spend $3.8 trillion. The most recent data that I could find anyway was from 2013. I think they don't have calculators that go that high for what we're spending now. They really, truly do. Because it's just numbers that people can't understand. I mean, that equals over $10,000 for every man, woman, and child in the United States. That's just insane. So if you're a family of five, that's $50,000. That's your tab on the healthcare spending in this country. And you wonder why your insurance premiums are so stinking high. That's just part of it. But globally, the spending on chronic disease is expected to hit $47 trillion by 2030. That's a dollar amount higher than the gross domestic product of the six largest economies in the world. That's unsustainable. The whole world will go bankrupt.
Yeah.
There's no possible way that by 2030 we're not dealing with massive bankruptcy if things aren't changed in a hurry. Or we're going to have tremendous die-off because we're just not going to be able to provide the health care that needs to be provided to people.
Right. But then maybe people will actually start getting, you know, I mean, those with chronic disease will actually start getting the help that they need.
Right.
Because they're going to have to go outside of the system. Because face it, this amount is staggering. But if it was actually treating people, it would be a completely different story than what it is. But it's not.
Right. It's absolutely
It's actually
not.
Making it worse in most circumstances.
Right. So two reasons. There's a couple. We're going to focus on two. There are about a million I could probably think of. Reasons that conventional medicine really hasn't addressed chronic disease. So the first one is just a basic paradigm. The medical model is the wrong paradigm for chronic disease. Conventional medicine, it came to be when we were dealing with lots and lots of infections. That's how it was born. We came up with what we thought was the magic bullet. the advent of antibiotics to kill all of these infections. And we came up with penicillin, and we thought that was going to cure the world because that was what was killing people. And we come up with an antibiotic, and yeah, did that help? Absolutely. But that's when people were coming in with you know, infections. But that's not what people are coming in for now. That when you're dealing with, you know, an infection, one problem, and you've got one doctor, it's pretty simple that there's one treatment for that. The things today aren't that simple. I mean, most of the time when people go to the doctor, they're not going for just an acute problem. Occasionally that's the case, but for the most part, they're going in for a chronic problem or more than one chronic problem. They're extremely difficult to manage. They're beyond expensive to treat. It takes more than one doctor with the current medical system. If you have a heart problem, you've got to go to your heart cardiologist. If you have a hormone problem, you've got to go to your endocrinologist. If you have a lung problem, you've got to go to your pulmonologist. If you've got a kidney problem, you've got to go to your nephrologist. I mean, why can't just one person at least try to manage something? I don't understand. We've gone completely into this whole different model of healthcare that's not helping people.
It definitely doesn't work. Well, and I think, you know, you also, you know, said that many people, you know, are coming in for chronic issues. They're also coming in with these diffuse symptoms that could be so many different things. I mean, and so, you know, you talk.
I'm tired and I feel like I can't go anywhere.
Right.
I'm just exhausted.
I have
all
headaches.
The time.
I'm in pain. You know, those things can be, I mean, or brain fog or, I mean, those things could be so many different problems. And so they might run a couple of tests and they might find a problem. And then you get treated for that, but it doesn't
miss the boat.
Right. They completely miss the boat. And that happens more times than it doesn't. Far more times than it doesn't.
Right. Yeah. It's just, if you take that, what we're doing conventionally in medicine right now, and apply it to a chronic disease, it just doesn't work. The whole system is broken. It's set up great for acute problems and, you know, figuring out, hey, this is, you know, we've got an acute problem. Something's happening. Can we figure out what it is and take care of it all relatively quickly within a very short period of time? But it's not set up to help you if you have heart disease that's been developing over the last 30, 40, 50 years. It's just not a model for that because it's not looking for things until there's already a problem. By the time the problem presents itself, you've got an issue. And that's great if your problem is an infection. Okay, we can run the test. We can figure out what the bug is and we've got a medication to kill it. Awesome. But when your problem has been this slow, insidious thing that's just been creeping up on you, there's no way to go back and figure out what's going on in the modern model.
Right. Well, and I'm just, you know, trying to put this into, you know, layman's terms or try to give an example, and which I think I can from my own life, is this whole issue, and we've talked so much about this on the show, of testing TSH to figure out your thyroid function.
Oh, God.
I went for years and years and years with normal TSH, and they kept saying, well, you're fine. When we finally got to the point where we found out I had Hashimoto's and I had, you know, my thyroid peroxidase antibodies were off the charts. They were so high.
Higher than could be measured by the devices, by the testing equipment that they use.
That is when finally my TSH became out of range.
Yeah.
It was in range before that. And so if anyone had actually ran the test to find out what was going on with my thyroid, I could avoid it. I mean, I could have avoided Hashimoto's. But nobody, I mean, until TSH was off, then they just kept saying, nope, you're fine. Nope, you're fine. It didn't make any sense.
Right.
But I think, you know, that's
And all they did was run TSH over and over and over and over.
Every time.
Again.
I had more TSH tests ran than, I mean, they were like, they're running TSH again? I'm like, well, yeah.
You're not alone. We just had a patient bring in a stack of blood work to us, and we're like, they're like, I had all these blood tests ran. And I looked at him, and I'm like, unfortunately, you had the exact same three tests ran over and over and over and over again. We figured it out. They had three tests ran almost 20 times. I think it was something like 18 times.
Yeah. That's how I was. TSH and iron.
Yeah.
That's what they kept doing. And I'm like, I'm just pale. Like, that's just what, because they were just like, yeah, you do look like you're really pale. I'm like, yep, I'm
pale.
That's what I look
like. She's so pale, she's transparent, ladies and gentlemen. That's what Irish gets you. She's pale. All right, we've got to take another break. When we come back, we're going to continue talking about how modern medicine is failing to address the chronic disease state that we are in. You're listening to Wellness 101. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We are on part two of discussing chronic disease and how conventional medicine, our modern medical model, really isn't the best model to address and help those with chronic disease. It's really good at acute problems and things like that, but it's really just not the best model for chronic disease. So we thought that this was going to be we were going to have a two-part show, but we're probably going to have to continue this on again next week because we just have so much information that we want to get out there and help you understand and know that if you're suffering from a chronic disease, that there is hope. That's it's not just you. It's that the model that you're in for your healthcare may not be the best model for you. There's a different way out there, and it's available to you.
Right.
So, all right. When we left off, what were we talking about? We were talking about how back in the day, the model when modern medicine was developed, it was a time of infections and things like that were the main cause of death. And so what we had was you had a patient, you had a doctor, and you had a problem. So then that meant that there was a treatment that would take care of that. But that's not what we have today. Today we have chronic problems that have many different issues, and one doctor, the way the model is set up, you've got to go to a bunch of different doctors for the one problem that you have. And so, you know, if you have diabetes, you end up with eye problems and kidney problems and heart problems. And so that means if you have diabetes, you're going to your endocrinologist, your optometrist, your nephrologist, and your cardiologist, when that could really all be managed by a person. So it's just the application of the modern medical model to all of our problems of chronic disease just doesn't help. It's just led to us using symptom suppressing medications rather than addressing what's actually going on underneath the surface and figuring out what's happening there.
Right. Well, medications and sometimes surgery.
Right. Exactly.
I mean,
yeah. So if you go to the doctor and they tell you, oh, you have high blood pressure, you have high cholesterol, the answer is, oh, here, take this medication to lower your cholesterol, take this medication to lower your high blood pressure. No one's actually looking, wait a minute, what's causing that person's cholesterol to go up? What's causing that person's blood pressure to go up? Nobody's looking at that, and nobody's addressing that issue.
Right. Unfortunately, I mean, you know, this can be even worse. And when you have something like back pain, when they're told, well, you know, we have to operate on it. That's the only way that it'll ever get fixed, which we know does not work.
Right.
And or if someone comes in and there's an issue with our gallbladder, well, gallbladder comes out. I mean, how many patients do you have that have their gallbladder removed?
Tons. But God gave you that gallbladder to be taken out.
That's the purpose of it.
That's the purpose of it. So the purpose is to have surgery and have it removed. Yeah,
so that surgeons can learn, because they learn on gallbladder surgeries.
No offense to any surgeons out there. We know you do a great job. Just to preface that, in case I ever need surgery sometime.
Right, exactly. But a gallbladder, a lot of times, is one of the first surgeries that, you know, they perform. And so I do sometimes wonder if...
A dysfunctional gallbladder just means that you have other problems going on that needed to be addressed long before you got there.
There are times when a gallbladder needs to come out.
Yes.
I mean, there are times when it's so infected that, you know, there's...
Yep. Dying and necrotic.
Yes,
and
it will need to come
problems.
Out.
You got to take it out.
The vast majority of times when a gallbladder is removed, it did not need to be removed. And people are furious when they come in their clinic and they learn that.
Right.
Because there are a lot of problems that come along with not having a gallbladder.
Right. Because a lot of people that come to see us, they say, well, I knew that I had a gallbladder issue, but they just told me that they were just going to wait and see what happened. Well, waiting and seeing what happened is might as well, we're going to wait until it gets so bad we have to take it out because we don't really have anything for it.
A lot of people say, well, I was having pain there. And they said, well, it's your gallbladder. It needs to come out. and thinking, okay, well, I guess that'll fix the pain. Like, it was never a long discussion.
Right. And then they, when they come in, they're like, yeah, I'm still having the pain. It's still
exactly,
there.
Exactly. And that happens almost every single time. Same thing with back surgery. They're still having the pain.
Still having the pain. That's exactly right. I mean, you know, if we think about, you know, I use teeter-totters as an example, too. And on one side of the teeter-totter, you have health. And on the other side of the teeter-totter, you have death. Modern medicine is intervening on the death side. That's just where it's at. It's just keeping you alive, and you know, not really preventing anything.
Right.
We're not implementing the strategies that actually prevent disease or catch them in their early stages and say, hey, these are the things that you can do to actually turn this stuff around and reverse this to where you don't actually develop diabetes.
Right. Well, and I want to make a point, you know, of saying that we are not against conventional medicine for a lot of things.
No.
I mean, you know, if I get hit by a bus, I'm going to the hospital.
Right.
I mean, I'm, you know, TJ is not going to help me at that point.
No.
It's just...
I'm going to help get her to the hospital.
Exactly. I mean, and you know, modern medicine is able to do some amazing things.
Yeah.
I mean,
there's lots of really cool stuff. I mean, I was just talking to a gentleman the other day and talking about some stem cell work that's being done in helping people that have diabetes and watching this stuff. You know, it's possible that we're on the brink of being able to reverse that. Well, that's great. But why can't we prevent people from getting it in the first place, so we don't have to do that? And if we do happen to need that, it's there. We know it's in our back pocket. So that's just one of the things. So there's another article out there. The title of it was "Genetic Factors Are Not the Major Causes of Chronic Diseases," because a lot of people want to say, "Oh, it's my genetics. I'm, you know, so-and-so, my mom had this or my dad had this, right. So I have it."
Unfortunately, all of the new genetic research has shown that's wrong.
That's not true. More than 85% of chronic disease is caused by environmental factors, things like diet, behavior, environmental toxins, and lifestyle. The things you choose is 85% of why you have a chronic disease if you have one. So that's just blows people's mind. You're not predetermined and destined to have diabetes just because your mom had diabetes. That's not it.
You may have a genetic predisposition where it makes it easier for you to get that. So
right.
There are people that, you know, could eat the same things that you eat, you know, have basically the same, environment and lifestyle factors and not get that disease. So there is a genetic component, but that's a small little part of it. There is this enormous 85% of it that comes down to what you're doing.
Yes, it's your choices. If you're choosing to do something, that you're affecting your health. Everything you choose affects your health.
And that's a good or bad thing, depending on what kind of person you are.
Right.
To me, like, that's so exciting.
Right.
I mean, you know, like finding out, like when I found out I had celiac disease, I'm like, wait, I have something that I can completely, you know,
control. Yeah.
By just not eating gluten. Okay, gluten's gone. Like, that's a no-brainer, right?
Easy.
I mean, but I know a lot of people are like, I don't know how you'd ever do that. And so, I mean, you know, it makes a big difference how
right.
you look at it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's just ways around this stuff, and it's your choice. And you the control, if we put the control in healthcare back into the people's hands, which is what we do at the Institute, if we put that back into your hands, you can change so much stuff. I mean, what is it? There's an article I was reading. It was just insane. It was like something about, it was talking about the Chinese population. In 1980, 1% of the Chinese population had diabetes. And in one generation, the incidence of diabetes rose over 1,000%. That's just insane. That it just blows my mind when we see things like that. This just says genetics are not the thing that's creating the problem. It is lifestyle choices. You have the power. It's in your control. You can choose to be healthier. Sometimes you need more information. Sometimes you need to be taught. You need your hand held to help you along the way.
And usually you do. We can make it easier.
And that's what our job is to help you understand, learn, know what's going on. There is a better way. All right. That's about all the time we have for today. I want to thank you all for tuning in and listening to us. If you missed last week's session, go back and check it out. Visit our website, theinstituteofnaturalhealth.com. Call us, 314-293-8123. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram. We're very excited to get back to you if you leave us a message. For Wellness 101 and Aaron, I'm Dr. TJ. Thanks for listening.